This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
This long-awaited judgment really provides an important measure of justice for Bosco Ntaganda's victims in Ituri and sends a strong message to perpetrators of atrocities that even those believed to be untouchable can one day be held to account.
That's Maria Elena Vignoli of Human Rights Watch on the conviction of a former Congolese warlord for war crimes. Details coming up. Also, African Continental Free Trade Area was launched in Niger at the opening of the African Union Summit. The 15-member Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, has agreed to adopt a single currency. And Somali militant group Al-Shabaab has executed 18 people since last Wednesday. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the African Continental Free Trade Area, was launched in Niger yesterday at the opening of the African Union Summit. The agreement, signed by 54 of 55 African nations, will form the largest free trade area in the world. While there is much hope that Pan-African trade will grow, structural weaknesses are expected to make it a slow process, as Anne Nzonski reports for VOA. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari launched the African Continental Free Trade Area by signing the continent's largest economic onto the deal. After months of reluctance over competition concerns, Nigeria's support gives weight to forming the world's largest free trade zone, a 55-nation bloc worth $3.4 trillion. Inter-African trade makes up only 17% of exports, which are hampered by poor infrastructure, taxes, bureaucracy, and corruption. The trade pact aims to boost cross-border trade by reducing or eliminating duties and red tape. Still, much work remains before the agreement becomes effective. The International Criminal Court has convicted a Congolese warlord nicknamed the Terminator on 18 counts of war crimes and crimes against humanity. From Paris, Lisa Bryant reports the ruling delivers the important victory for the ICC's prosecution team following a string of setbacks.
Now, Mr. Ntaganda, please rise. Mr. Ntaganda, for the reasons...
Former Congolese warlord Bosco Ntaganda listened intently but showed no emotion as presiding judge Robert Fremmer read out the judgment. He is only the fourth person convicted of war crimes in the ICC's 17 years of operations. The ruling finds 45-year-old Ntaganda guilty of directly and indirectly committing heinous acts in the Democratic Republic of Congo's northeastern Ituri province in 2002 and 2003, when he headed the Union of Congolese Patriots, or UPC, militia movement. Among the acts, murder, rape, sexual slavery, and conscripting child soldiers. The atrocities aimed to drive the ethnic Lendu population out of Ituri. Judge Fremmer recounted how Ntaganda killed an elderly man who served as a local Catholic priest. He also described another incident in which Ntaganda's forces rounded up, raped, and massacred at least 49 people. The judge said the killers used sticks, batons, knives, and machetes to do the job.
The bodies of those killed, men, women, and children and babies, were found in the banana field over the next days. Some bodies were found naked, some had their hands tied up, and some had their heads crushed.
Ntaganda claimed his innocence throughout the trial. He has 30 days to appeal, with sentencing scheduled for a separate hearing. He faces up to life in prison. Rights groups are cheering the ruling.
Today is a very important day for justice.
Maria Elena Vignoli is International Justice Counsel at Human Rights Watch.
This long-awaited judgment really provides an important measure of justice for Bosco Ntaganda's victims in Ituri and sends a strong message to perpetrators of atrocities that even those believed to be untouchable can one day be held to account.
The ruling also gives a much-needed boost to ICC prosecutors after the acquittal of former Ivorian President Laurent Gbagbo earlier this year and that of former Congolese Vice President Jean-Pierre Bemba on appeal in 2018. But HRW's Vignoli says thousands of Congolese victims still await justice for years of atrocities in conflict-torn parts of the country. She says they include some Ntaganda's forces allegedly committed in DRC's eastern Kivu provinces, and which were not covered in this trial. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
The 15-member Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, has agreed to adopt a single currency known as the ECO to boost trade, investment, and commerce in member countries. Mike Mbonye has more on the prospect of a single currency from Lagos.
Chisom Onwokwe is a Nigerian businessman who sells shoes, clothes, leather belts, and toothpaste made in Nigeria in Benin Republic, Togo, Ghana, and Sierra Leone. He says the ECOWAS decision to introduce the ECO as a single currency is a step in the right direction. Chisom says it will be easy for him to do business with customers in the sub-region.
The proposed ECOWAS currency, the ECO, is a welcome development. It will make my business easy because I can transact with my customers with a single currency.
Chisom urges leaders of ECOWAS to ensure that citizens of member countries are educated about the new currency before it goes into circulation. Leaders of ECOWAS recently agreed in Abuja that the currency should be in place by next year. It will be phased in as the 15 countries meet requirements for debt levels, inflation rates, and other macroeconomic indicators. The heads of government of the sub-region say the currency will be based on a flexible exchange rate regime with a monetary policy framework focused on inflation targeting. Dr. Babatunde Adeoye, an associate professor of economics at the University of Lagos, says the single currency will boost economic activity in the grouping and improve trade relations among ECOWAS states and their trade partners. But the member countries will need to cooperate closely to stabilize the exchange rate of the new currency with their respective national currencies.
Each of those countries under ECOWAS has its own exchange rate. And the rate are be determined fundamentally by what they export to the international market. For them to harmonize it requires some key steps to be taken. One of those things is by reinforcing the institution that we be involved in harmonizing the different countries' policies, both fiscal and monetary policies.
Adeoye says the business community in member countries will accept the currency provided that it is legal and strong. He says member states should tackle inflation, debt, and fiscal deficits to make their economies thrive with the new currency.
One of those conditions for a common currency union is for each of those countries to attain what we call both primary and secondary convergence criteria, of which it involves, you know, macroeconomic fundamentals such as inflation rate, fiscal deficit, debt, and so on and so forth. So by the time each of these countries get these things right, there won't be crisis. If you look at the case of Greece, one of those issues has to do with debt overburden. And I think it's a major issue whereby those countries in West Africa have to come together, because most of those countries also, they have that problem.
The idea of a common currency for the West African region started 30 years ago to boost cross-border trade and economic development. This is Mike Mbonye for VOA News in Lagos.
You're listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. 15 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The African Continental Free Trade Area was launched in Niger yesterday at the opening of the African Union Summit. The International Criminal Court has convicted a Congolese warlord on 18 counts of war crimes. And the 15-member Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, has agreed to adopt a single currency. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Somali militant group Al-Shabaab has executed 18 people since Wednesday. All but one were accused of being Somali government soldiers or spying for Kenya or the U.S. CIA. An 18-year-old man was publicly stoned to death for allegedly raping a 16-year-old girl. The man argued the sex was consensual, but the judge said he deserved the death penalty because he was married. The group did not give a reason for the surge in executions, but has been the target of dozens of U.S. airstrikes over the past 2.5 years. The airstrikes are often ordered on the basis of ground-level intelligence collected by Somali government sources. And in more news from Somalia, witnesses say at least 7 people were killed and 22 others were injured in Mogadishu today in 2 attacks, a vehicle bombing and a shootout between suspected militants and security forces. In the Gambia, civil society groups have embarked on a campaign to combat rape, sexual violence and sexual harassment. This follows rape allegations leveled against the exiled Gambian leader, Yahya Jammeh, by some Gambian women. Reporter Panderambai reports.
Sex is widely considered a taboo subject in the Gambia, rarely discussed in the open. Religion and cultural beliefs are often invoked to shy away from raising awareness on the matter. This has led to cases of sexual assault and rape not being reported to the police. With the help of Human Rights Watch, Gambian rape victims have started speaking out. A 23-year-old Gambian beauty pageant winner, Fatou Diallo, is on the forefront of a campaign to combat rape. She says she was raped by the former Gambian president, Yahya Jammeh.
I can't wait to face Yahya Jammeh. I was 18 years old when he raped me in 2015. I've spent the last 4 years wanting to erase, to hide that it didn't happen.
Soon after Diallo made her accusation, many other women took on social media to say that they are also victims of rape. One of them alleges she was raped by an official of the Gambian Foreign Ministry. She says the official is married to her aunt. That woman is now taking heat from family members for exposing her story.
Being scared to actually come out and share my story after I got the courage to do it yesterday, I had people that were close to me that were like, why did you have to do that? Why did you have to share your story? And being judged and being asked why I speak out was one of the many reasons why I actually never spoke about it.
Sekou Cisse is a communication officer at the Gambian Foreign Ministry in Banjul. Cisse says the accused official has been placed on administrative leave pending the outcome of his case and says the government has an obligation to investigate.
One of the fundamental principles behind his suspension is that the government of the Gambia had enacted Women's Act 2010, Sexual Offences Act, and also is a signatory to the United Nations Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women and the Protocol to the African Charter on Human and People's Rights on the Rights of Women in Africa. The government of the Gambia, as a respecter of human rights, is obliged to implement these instruments.
Gambian civil rights groups and activists this past week staged a demonstration condemning sexual violence against women.
We will speak up no more. We will speak up no more. We will speak up no more.
There are no official statistics on the number of rape cases recorded in the Gambia. The Gambian Justice Ministry has opened a rape hotline calling on victims to get in touch with the ministry or the police. Mamadou Sabali is a former Secretary General and head of Gambia's civil service. He also served as Gambia's presidential affairs minister under James rule.
I think any honest Gambian would agree that there are issues of sexual violence in our country, in at the level of the households, in public offices. But a conversation has never emerged out of these issues because of obvious reasons of honor and privacy issues.
Sabali says victims of sexual violation should be encouraged to speak up. He also says all barriers hindering the fight against rape should be crossed.
I think government and institutions need to come up with very clear policies, and the laws regarding these issues should be implemented to protect especially women.
Sabali, however, says he thinks the country probably does not have a modern scientific laboratory in which rape evidence can be properly studied. For VOA Africa, this is Pandirimbay reporting.
Cameroon says only a tiny fraction of the 285,000 Central African Republic refugees in the country have agreed to return to the CAR despite a February peace deal and months of negotiations with Cameroon and the United Nations Refugee Agency. Refugees say they do not feel safe enough to return home. Mokiedwin Kenzaka reports from Yaoundé.
49-year-old Florence Yuambi's husband was killed in crossfire between rebels and government troops in the Central African Republic town of Mingala 4 years ago. She fled to Cameroon for safety, where she has lived as a refugee ever since.
J'ai le diplôme, mais je peux pas travailler. Quand je pars chercher le travail quelque part là.
She says she spent her last 3 years studying in Yaoundé to become an accountant. If she returned to the Central African Republic, says Yambi, she is not sure to find a decent job. She says she prefers to sell bottled water and soft drinks to university students in Yaoundé, where there is peace, and take care of her 3 kids. They are certain not to get a good education in her country, says Yambi, because it was devastated by war. The CAR has been rocked by violence since 2013, when mainly Muslim Seleka rebels ousted then-President Francois Bozizé, prompting reprisals from mostly Christian militias. In February, authorities reached a peace deal with 14 armed groups following United Nations-sponsored talks in Khartoum. It was expected to usher in a period of stability and lead to an agreement between Bangui, Yaoundé, and the United Nations Refugee Agency for the CAR refugees in Cameroon to return home. But only 6,000 refugees have so far agreed to leave. Most, like Yambi, refuse to return to the CAR, citing fears of violence in some areas and a country devastated by war. Viviane Barkua is the CAR's Minister of Humanitarian Action and Reconciliation. She says her country needs its citizens to return and help develop their communities and the nation.
Ce qu'il faut retenir, c'est que nos compatriotes vont rentrer, ceux qui veulent rentrer, vont rentrer.
She says she is reiterating to her compatriots who agreed to voluntarily return that they will be treated with dignity and that the CAR will protect them and respect all conventions it has signed to uphold their rights back home. The UNHCR representative in the CAR, Buti Kale, says violence has declined since the peace deal, especially in the CAR's western and southwestern areas.
One would not say everything is perfect, but one would say that for all those who are willing to go back, there are chances that they would be well reinserted into their areas of origin.
But several armed groups have rejected President Faustin Archange Touadéra's cabinet because only 6 of the 14 arms groups that signed the peace are included. Skeptics of the CAR peace deal point out similar agreements in 2014, 2015, and 2017 quickly fell apart. The UN says over 600,000 Central Africans remain refugees in neighboring countries, while over 650,000 are internally displaced. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaounde.
Kenyans affected by dwarfism are using soccer to fight the stigma. The Short Stature Society of Kenya formed East Africa's first dwarf team just over a year ago with the hope of turning it into a national league to spread across the region. Sarah Kimani reports from Nairobi.
In Nairobi's city stadium, a football team stretches, jogs and makes quick fist bumps. 10 minutes later, a referee blows the whistle, marking the start of the first friendly match between Kenya's Lion Stars FC team and the Macmillan FC, made up of under-14s. This is no ordinary game. It is a match between Kenyan dwarfs against a teens club. Ruth Mweni, the chairperson of the Short Stature Society of Kenya, is among the founders of the Lion Stars.
It was a good idea to start it because it creates awareness about us. We need people to know about us. Let us tell a story about ourselves, but not people to tell a story about us.
The Lions lose the game against the under-14s 2-0, but easily take the one against the under-10s 1-0. Lion FC team captain Joseph Maina is happy with his team's progress.
From the look of the games that they have played, I can say that from day to day, my guys are improving a lot. If we are to complete this journey and hit our target, that is the World Dwarf Games and the Copa Rabaja in Peru, they have to believe in themselves.
The other teams say they have a worthy opponent, as Joseph Ocheng, the coach for under-14s, explains.
If they can be motivated, they can do very well. Actually, they are opening, they are running. I think they have a very good team.
Estimates from Kenya's National Bureau of Statistics indicate that about 3,000 Kenyans are affected by dwarfism. The Short Stature Society of Kenya has just over 600 members. They use sports to come together and fight the stigma often associated with their height. The team, however, has challenges to overcome, as Mweni explains.
In terms of equipment, like the soccer ball that they are using currently, it's not the normal size. Size 4. We have one. We need more.
Apart from soccer, the society has badminton players who will participate next month in a world championship tournament in Geneva. Sarah Kimani for VOA News, Kenya.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Joe Gill, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Stand up!